May 7th, everybody, 2020. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is 2K12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for joining with us. No matter what day it is you're listening, we know a lot of people listen on the archives. We archive every show over at education-talkradio.org. That's our website. And we put a new schedule up there on Saturdays, and you can follow what we're doing on Twitter at EduTalkRadio. On Facebook, it's EduTalk Radio and Larry Jacobs. That's me. And then on LinkedIn, it's Larry Jacobs. I don't know why we did that, but we did. And what can I tell you? Sorry to mix you up on that. Hey, go over and check out what we're doing at our Equity and Access website. Key stuff these days. Wow, just incredible. Boy, were we ahead of our time. It's ace-ed.org. Ace-ed.org is now an acronym for the American Consortium for Equity in Education. Get it? ACE-ED. Okay, ace-ed.org. Our magazine lives there. That's Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity. All right, ACE. And we're starting a consortium. It's all about educator voice. So please join with us. It's all free. ace-ed.org. Check it out. You get a free subscription to the magazine. It'll come right into your inbox when we publish it, which is six times a year. And we want to hear your voice over there. We're putting together a lot of Twitter chats, a lot of webinar type stuff, all that kind of thing, plus the podcast. Please go over. It's got great news and resources, especially during this COVID-19 times. Again, ace-ed.org. You're cordially invited. Tell your friends. They're invited too, as a matter of fact. We have a show today with the National Association for Gifted Children. Our good friend John Sagoda is here, and he has brought with him their, quote, parent representative. But she's a professor, a doctor in education, Dr. Tracy Ford Inman over at Western Kentucky University. So let me get to John first. He's our old friend, executive director, NAGC. Good morning, John. It's Larry.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine, buddy. How you doing?
Doing okay.
Everything
doing
good?
Okay. It's a nice sunny day here in the Washington, D.C. area, so so far, so good, yeah.
So far, so good, of course, with our quarantine. I hope you and the fam are doing just great, and the folk, I assume everybody's working at home these days at NAGC, right?
Oh, yes. We've been working from home for, I think we're going on 3 months now almost, so.
It's week eight. I think it's officially week eight. Yeah, it's nuts.
Okay.
It's nuts, but we'll make it work, my friend. We will make it work. And John used to be with TESOL for ESL teachers of English to students of other languages. Okay, great organization itself. Now he's with NAGC, the National Association of Gifted Children. Tracy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Tracy. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. How's life in Western Kentucky? Which city are you in?
I'm in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is about an hour north of Nashville. Most folks can locate Nashville on the map, not so much Bowling Green.
Yeah, and how are things going in Kentucky? Kentucky opened early, didn't they? Am I right or wrong on that?
Oh, no. We have one of the most popular governors, Governor Andy. He has
Andy Beshears, I know. He's good. He's good.
Yeah. He's awesome. So we have not opened yet. We are still under wraps. We do have plans.
And as I said that, I think I was thinking of Tennessee, which everybody mixes up Kentucky and Tennessee, just in case you don't know that. Do you know that? Everybody mixes those up. Okay.
I've
right.
heard it.
So I apologize for that. And Andy Beshears is a great governor. I think he's doing a fabulous job down there. Okay. And how's you and your family doing with all this?
We're plugging along. I have a son and a daughter-in-law who are nurses. And so that's a little bit of anxiety, but I'm proud of them for doing what they're doing. And the rest of us are hunkering down and working hard.
Good enough. And you know, you're a professor. I just want to get this here at Western Kentucky University. You're the associate director of the Center for Gifted Studies. All right. And you're also on the NAGC board of directors, but you're the parent representative. Okay. Explain those two things, what you're doing. Tracy.
Well, I think quite a few of us in gifted education got into it because we gave birth to a child and we had no idea what to do with them. And so we took classes to learn. I was a teacher already, and then I focused on gifted ed. And so at the Center for Gifted Studies, we provide services for gifted children, camps, learning experiences. I work a lot with teachers, providing professional development I work a lot with parents as well. So on the as a parent rep on the NAGC board, I try to make sure that parents are part of each discussion, and that is not a hard thing to do on our board. We have an incredible board this year, and and make sure that we focus on people who make a daily difference in the lives of their children.
I think it's just great what you do. I really do, and it's really cool. And what is the Center for Gifted Studies do?
The Center for Gifted Studies has been around for almost 40 years, and we provide services for teachers of gifted children through professional development seminars, teaching endorsement classes, things like that. We provide services for children through camp and different resources. And we also, Saturday programming, things like that. And then we provide services for parents, whether that's parent seminars, bringing in special speakers, lots of phone calls, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's an exciting place to be.
Cool. And I assume it works very much in tandem with NAGC. Would that be right, Jen? You guys are together on this.
Definitely. NAGC is very fortunate to have many strong partners with university research centers, other organizations that focus on meeting the needs of gifted students, supporting parents, supporting educators. It's really an incredible national network of institutions and organizations, and NAGC is very, very appreciative of all the work that we can do together to help students and parents and educators, especially during this time.
Yeah, well, you're not kidding, especially during this time. Let's get into that for a second. Okay. John, I'll let you start. You want to swing it over to Dr. Inman, you are welcome to do that. But, John, gifted kids, okay, have their own special group of needs, all right? And they need them during normal times, just like every kid. Let's be honest there. I don't mean to intend. What is coming out as an important factor during this time of quarantine, okay? And what are you finding, okay, as we're into this time of remote education? I'll start with John. You can pass that to Tracy.
Thank you, Larry. Well, as you said,
feel free to pass it to her anytime because she is so brilliant. okay,
yes, she is.
So,
yes.
You know, go ahead. You can make up something, John, or you can just pass it to Tracy. Okay, so go ahead. Do it. Go.
Well, I would just start off by saying that.
Hey, that's enough out of you, John. Tracy answered a question. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, John.
Tracy, take it from here. Why don't you?
you know, Larry, you're so right. These are children first. And right now, with all of the uncertainty, the sense of helplessness, the lack of structure, anxiety, even grief as they're looking at. Not seeing parents, grandparents, not classmates.
Yeah.
And so we've got to understand that most of our children are experiencing trauma right now. And then you throw on kids having more responsibilities at home, poverty, unsafe living conditions, and it's just exacerbated. When you put the concept of giftedness on top of it, you can almost multiply it tenfold. So, and I think one thing that we really need to understand right now is we've got to the focus should be on social emotional needs more than educational needs right now. And that's true for all children. But for gifted kids, it looks even a little different from that because gifted kids are hardwired a little bit differently. There is a certain sense of intensity that kids have. Things are really, really great or they're the depths of despair. These kids have a sensitivity, which means they are empathetic. They feel emotions of other people. They have intense commitment to people and ideas. And they can have a strong commitment to a moral right of action, and they don't give into adult rationalization, ties into it. You know, they're able to kind of get to the core of a matter. So this whole rationalization of adults, mixed messages we're getting about information, they are picking up on all of that. Of course, that makes them feel even more uneasy and anxiety-ridden. In fact, I was talking to a teacher who teaches high school kids, College Board Advanced Placement and honors classes, and she said that out of her sophomores and seniors, the most noted problem for her students during remote learning was anxiety exacerbation, which she felt causes them to either underperform or overperform.
Wow.
And so those are real issues that we have. Yeah.
These are tremendous issues that you just brought up. I have to tell you, and I'm doing a lot of shows, obviously, about remote education right now, and two of my favorite guests, Nick Poliak and Mike Lubelfeld, two terrific Illinois superintendents, were on yesterday, and I asked them both what their school districts were concentrating on. They both said social emotional learning now way over academic learning. Okay, so that you just echoed. What they said, and I'm sure you could ask a million superintendents, you probably get a pretty close to a million the same answer. Okay, we get that,
but it's interesting.
Yeah, I think we would. Okay, if they didn't know it before, they certainly know it now. I can almost guarantee
that's
you
right,
that.
Right.
But your point about the gifted and talented kids, they are, I'll say it this way though, I mean it as a compliment, differently wired, hardwired, so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And their social emotional needs are different, all right. And do you find now we don't have the personal we do to a certain extent, but we don't have the true personal interaction right now. What are you hearing from teachers of the gifted? Okay, beyond what you just said, okay. And how are teachers of the gifted handling it?
Well, it's interesting because children are gifted 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and so. Teachers, if they are fortunate enough,
talk right into your phone. Talk right into your phone. We're losing you every so often. Make sure you talk right into your phone.
If they are fortunate enough to have a teacher specifically for gifted education, those folks tend to know what to do. But most of them don't. They're dealing with their regular classroom teachers. But gifted educators would say perhaps one of the most important things to offer children through remote learning is choice, but it has to be appropriate level of choice. I think too often they're getting busy work, repetition. Children who are gifted may only need two repetitions to get something, whereas another child may need 30. And everybody's getting it. It's just at a different pace. So I was talking to a parent in Illinois who has a twice exceptional child, and that's a child who is gifted and also has another exceptionality. This child has a learning disability. And he hates online classes because he argued that the class is always going to the lowest common denominator, that he wants choices at his own level. And you ask kids, and they can tell you. I think another thing that is very, very important is that sense of community. This is a time when, during the shutdown, we tend all of us feeling lonely and isolated. And when you are different from the norm, that can be magnified. So a sense of community is extremely important. I was talking to one of my students. She's in Louisville, Kentucky, and she has an open time on Zoom where her kids can just come on and they'll sit and chat about things, about life. And she said that's
perfect.
The highlight of her day.
That's
yes,
perfect.
And so, we know this. We know how important it is to do this. So
yeah,
I would
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. You go ahead.
No, that's okay. I would argue for children with gifts and talents, and all children really, they need choice, so they are more highly motivated in what they're doing, and they need to be empowered to be in control of their own learning now more than ever. If we're going to teach these folks good skills, executive functioning skills, and that sort of thing, one way to do that is have them set their own schedules, be in control of what they learn and how they learn.
And John, what are you? It's amazing, John. What are you hearing from the generic gifted educator out there? And I'm going to get back to Tracy too, because there's an interesting challenge when she struck me when she said, if the kid is lucky enough to have a gifted educator, and obviously not all are. All right, because there's not that many of those. Okay, and what are you hearing from teachers in general, school counselors, gifted leaders, et cetera, about how all this is working out? John.
Well, I think, I think that what we're hearing is similar to where all teachers have been faced with the struggle suddenly now to adapt this whole new learning environment where everything has to go online quickly. And depending upon what district they're in, what state they're in, they've had varying levels of support, varying levels of resources to be able to do this. And I think with what Tracy just outlined in terms of the specific needs of gifted students and gifted children, that brings in other whole dimensions that online, you know, it's a very different kind of environment. And if teachers haven't been given the opportunities to learn how to teach online, how to offer a unique curriculum online, how to engage with students in an online environment, never mind the specific needs of gifted and talented students, it really has been a challenge for many educators. And certainly, as you said, in terms of the gifted education field, the number of educators does not meet the needs in terms of the number of gifted and talented students across the country. So I think there are additional challenges there. So that's some of the things that NAGC has been trying to focus on and what we can do as a national organization to help cultivate and pull together resources during this challenging time for both parents and educators.
Yeah, I mean, it is just brutal out there. And I use this analogy, okay, you know, I used it yesterday. And, you know, teachers have not been trained to do most teachers, let me say it that way, most teachers have not been trained to do online education. Okay, that's simple. They haven't been. And most kids are not used to it on a regular basis to absorb the information, et cetera, in the same way. All right. When we are asking someone who might be able to fly a Piper Cub to suddenly go in and land a 747 crowded with 400 people, that takes a little more time, okay, than the eight weeks we've given them. And I say this to every day, every educator out there, pat yourself on the back, take a minute, you're doing the best you can. Okay, and this is going to get easier, okay? But don't make yourself crazy with the expectations, and no one should make themselves crazy with the expectations. Just engage the kids. Pat yourself on the back. We suddenly got stuck with this, and we have to make the most of it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, on that note, Tracy, is there going to be like three courses next year, teaching online 101, teaching online 102, and teaching online 103, okay, at Western Kentucky?
Well, I would imagine folks are already designing that.
I have a feeling they are.
Yes, and at a university we have, you know, a very large IT team, and they're providing all kinds of help for that. But that's not the case in most districts. So they are really scrambling. They are, and I, you know, you talked about patting themselves on the back. I think one of the best ways that parents and educators can partner right now is just to have mutual appreciation. And let them know that each side is doing the very best they can to help children. And that's so important. So that honest discussion, that communication is more important now than ever before, I think.
Well mm-hmm. said. Well said. And I have to ask, okay, how are the – what do you hear – well, let me change the question. Which kids are hardest now, gifted? Because gifted kids, if I may, run, obviously, K-12, okay? And I think I'm guilty of this when I think of the gifted kids you were talking about. I was thinking older kids, high school kids. That's what came to mind, so to speak. Okay. What about younger kids who are gifted? Is there a trick with them? What are you hearing about that? Same thing?
Well, actually, I'm hearing more from parents of younger students than I am with older kids. And that's because older kids, they're more savvy with computers, I think. They certainly are savvy with social media. And I think that I've heard over and over and over how young children are saying things like, but I just want to hug you. It's been so long since I got to pat you. You know, it's that personal communication, that sense of touch that they get from a loving teacher that they're missing. And I think that's pretty challenging. So it's important for like I was talking to a mom who happens to be an FBI agent, and she said her second grader was really struggling until her teacher decided to have snack time together via the internet, and they would all just sit and chat and have snacks together, and how different her child was after that. She had a lot less anxiety because she was kind of getting back into that routine of really talking to her teacher, finding that quality time.
Do you find the teachers? Go ahead. I said you were done. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
I insist. You finish.
As far as work is concerned, I think the problem is that a lot of it tends to be repetitive for kids in some instances, and that's very difficult for them to maintain. motivation when they already know how to do it. So that's a challenge for students, yeah, too. And then that makes it a challenge for parents.
Right. It sure is. And what are you hearing from I guess it's all the same thing, teachers who are not trained in teaching gifted kids? What are you hearing from them, John, or what's going on with that, which is 90% of the teachers? What's going on?
Well, I think, you know, we've often find at NADC is that when teachers are looking for resources or how to work with gifted students who are not specifically trained in gifted education, you know, they're just looking to figure out how to work with these students and understand their specific needs. Tracy, if I could turn to you, because I know you do a lot of teacher training opportunities at Western Kentucky University. So you probably work with, I imagine you work with both gifted specialists as well as other teachers who are not yet fully trained in working with gifted students.
Trace?
That's true. I do. What I'm hearing from teachers is exasperation and exhaustion because they want so desperately for their kids to be okay. They want them to continue learning, but more importantly, they want them to be okay. And I am, in fact, I teach a gifted endorsement class, and since this NTI, non-traditional learning, took place, I took away all deadlines because they are spending so much time with their students. That's what they need. Yeah, the focus is them, you know, their families and their kids, and because they are trying so hard. You know, teachers get into teaching because they love children. High school, they also love subject matter, let's face it, but they love kids and they want them to succeed, and they're giving their all for it. I think teachers are doing an amazing job overall.
They are.
They're just worn out. They are.
They really are. And if I may, as you guys heard at the beginning, I'm very concerned about equity and access. We have our ace-ed.org, our consortium, which, by the way, both of you, I hope you go over to ace-ed.org, see what we're doing, and sign up. And we can talk about that if you want at some point. But it's free, and we really want your kind of voice out there, Tracy. Okay? Your type of person, Dr. Inman, with us, okay, as we fight for the equity thing, which brought up something, you know, gifted kids come in all shapes and colors. Okay, literally.
Oh, they do.
All right, literally. All right? And some of those gifted kids are from lower socioeconomic areas where, and you just talked there, I have very good friends I work with, Kentucky Valley Educational Co-op in Western Kentucky. You might know them, Tracy.
Yeah, good people.
KV, you see them?
Good people.
Yeah, they're great people. We do a lot of work with them. Okay? And, in fact, we got a Twitter chat coming up with them in a week or so. Okay, for everybody to join in with, okay, about equity and access. But what are you hearing about equity and access with gifted kids? Okay, and I'm thinking, I did a show a week ago. It's the poorest congressional district. It's in the Bronx. They gave every kid a laptop or a Chromebook to take home, and half the kids didn't have access once they got home. So what do you do then? What are you hearing about equity and access with the gifted kids, from the parents, if you're hearing anything? Trace.
Well, yes, I am, and I'm hearing the same kind of thing you are. Unfortunately, with this population, you have, as you said, if you're lucky enough for your district to send home a computer, you don't have access to it. You don't have the Wi-Fi. And so these are the kids who may be getting huge packets of papers that all teachers are sending to them. And unfortunately, these are oftentimes their parents have the type of job where they are required to go to work. Some of the lowest
yes,
folks,
right.
But they're out there and oftentimes without protection. So
think of our transit workers. Think of our transit workers, everybody, and especially in urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. And grocery store workers, all those kinds of folks. So
yes, thank you.
They're not having the parental oversight that they could have. And it's not because the parents don't want to. The parents just aren't there. You know, I was talking to a young woman, and she said her dad's really struggling because he's a single parent. She's got two little brothers who are in school, and he works third shift. So he works all night long, gets his kids up in the morning.
Yep.
He teaches them. He gets 2 hours of sleep a night, and then he goes to bed. And she said, but, you know, my dad would never, ever complain because that's what we do for kids. And so I think you've got this guilt that a lot of these parents are feeling as well because they can't do for their children what they need to do. And I really do worry about the equity issue. I worry about about eating. I worry, yes, these kids who are now in unsafe situations at home. It's terrifying, and I think it's such a concern. And
it's going all the time now.
Sure.
It's just brutal. Write something for us. I'll talk to you after the show when we're done with that, Tracy, about that. But solve a myth for me. John, I'll ask you this, and again, you can pass it to Tracy if you want. Okay, John, will gifted kids fall behind, or will they be creative enough, because they are gifted, to wend their way through this no matter what?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I definitely would want to definitely pass this to Tracy. But I think that it's a common myth that because students are identified as gifted, that they'll be fine, that they don't need any additional support, that they're going to find a way to make things work.
That's why I asked.
That is not the case. And Tracy, I know you can speak more eloquently to this.
I don't know about the eloquent part, but I can try to answer the question. It's one of the most damaging myths we have out there, that gifted kids will be fine on their own. Will gifted kids continue learning? Sure, they will. But will they learn at the rate that they should? And I'll reference one study that looked at fourth grade readers, and it was over a three-year period. And for the summertime, the average readers plateaued, which means they weren't growing in reading, which is actually a good kind of thing, because that means the teachers were making a difference for them, school they were learning. Whereas for the gifted learner, that line did not plateau at all. It stayed at the exact same slope.
Wow.
Whether it was summertime or weather instruction, which means, it means they're going to reach a point where the average readers are going to surpass the gifted readers, because the teaching wasn't done at the level that it should have been done. And so we are losing so much potential and talent and innovation in our country when we do not challenge all children appropriately. And I'm not saying just challenge gifted kids. I am saying we need to figure out where those kids are and what we can do to get them farther along. And that's very true with kids from underrepresented populations. You know, you're talking about the equity issue. When we look at elementary schools, those children might not be recognized, because maybe English isn't spoken in their home, or they don't have books in their home, or parents were working three jobs. So those primary teachers have to be talent scouts to find that, but they have to know what they're looking for, because those talents are going to look a little different from other folks. So that's where that appropriate challenge kind of comes in, figure out where kids are and how to get them beyond.
You said this word, Tracy, and John, you can comment on this too. And I asked the question knowing that was a myth, okay? Because I've done a lot of work with you guys, okay? I know that. Do you think most educators know that, that it's a myth? John, I'll ask you. The gifted kids are the lowest priority because they'll be fine. That's a myth, okay? Do you think most educators believe that?
I don't know that I would say that. I don't know enough to – no, for sure, whether most educators do that know that, but I think it's just a combination.
I mean, they care about the kids, but
sort of the public.
Prioritizing, yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
Now, I would say it is. I think it's a huge problem. The vast majority of teachers believe exactly that. The gifted kids are fine; they'll get by on their own. I have no trouble saying that. I think school board members believe it. Administrators believe it. Maybe the only folks who don't believe it are those who actually had education classes in gifted ed, or who are parents of gifted kids and they see them struggle. And John, I interrupted you, John. I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine, Tracy. And I think just to dovetail on that, as Larry, I know you and I have talked about this before, is that a gifted education is not equally mandated across the country. So I'm sure that because different states take different approaches to gifted education, and many states mandate it, many states fund it, some do either, some do neither. That certainly, I think, probably could, depending upon where one is, that could feed into one's beliefs around the needs of gifted students.
Yeah, it's a fascinating problem. And actually, you brought up something very interesting, Tracy. You know, I went to I went to teachers' college 4,000 years ago. Okay, you know, we walked around with togas with this with Socrates. It was that long ago.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, it was a long time ago. But okay, we did not have a class about gifted kids. We didn't even know there was such a thing. That wasn't even mentioned. In fact, even when I was teaching, it was almost never mentioned. Some kids we thought were, quote, smarter than others, but that was about it. And I'm talking about the 60s and 70s. Okay? And of course it doesn't surprise you at all. But today, and I'll just use Western Kentucky as an example. Okay, you guys have a college of education there, obviously. Is there a course on how to teach gifted kids?
It's interesting you say that. We have, just this past year, we have refocused the whole curriculum for education for teachers, and we are including gifted education. We are including differentiation for all learners, not just those who are struggling. And so I think it has been a strong revision of what we're looking for, and I would say that's partly due to the message that our university has been getting from our Center for Gifted Studies. That is important.
Of course.
But most teachers, you know, if you're lucky in your exceptional education class, there's a chapter on gifted kids, and you're really lucky if the professor actually assigns it and you talk about it. But that's, like you said, it's the thing that's going to be cut first. And that's just not knowing, not really getting it, believing the myth.
That's right.
Not understanding how important it is. Because they don't look needy. You know, people who have strengths don't look needy, but for gifted kids, their needs come from their strengths, not from their deficiencies. And that's a way to look at things that's a lens we don't usually view through.
It's astounding what's going on. We do have to change that. I mean, it's just something I've learned from working with NAGC for so long now that, you know, this is just it's a hidden, if I may, a hidden challenge within education. And that has to be changed, okay? So that we understand that is understood. I hope more schools and more school districts explain. And this is hard because the school boards, which allocate money, okay, school boards need to understand that this happens. And believe me, they have kids' best interests at heart. There's no doubt about that. I don't mean to imply that they don't, but a lot of people just don't understand that. Okay, it's just that simple. Resources, okay, resources for parents and educators. I'm going to swing over to John. What's going on over? What is NAGC offering these days, John? The days of remote education.
Right. So as this crisis began, one of the things that we did here at NAGC and we continue to do is identify and pull together different free resources for parents and educators to help support their gifted students at home. And so we have, and I'm very fortunate to be working with a fantastic staff team and a fantastic board that have been very helpful in this. If you go to our website, nagc.org, you'll find the online collection that we've pulled together, we've cultivated and continue to add to on a variety of free resources that parents can use at home, that educators can work in a distant learning environment, that are specifically for meeting the needs of gifted students. We've also produced a tip sheet. NAGC has produced a variety of tip sheets for parents over the years on different issues about their gifted children. And so we have published one last month on supporting your gifted child during the COVID-19 crisis that speaks to many of the specific issues that Tracy has brought up, the social-emotional needs, and other areas as well. And you can download that on our website as well. And a few weeks ago, in the middle of April, we held a webinar on the distance learning needs of gifted students. And that recording is also available on our website. And we're looking to develop more resources to help both parents and educators in this unique environment right now.
It is. And everybody, be prepared. This crazy time might go on for a long, long time. We don't know. Okay? Just, you know, assume nothing.
Yeah.
All right. And on that note, if I may, John, I note here, I'm on your website. We wanted everybody to go to Orlando, Florida in November, okay, for the NAGC annual convention. Okay. I heard you breathe. What's your thoughts on that this year? Can you make it virtual if they have to? if you have to.
Well, I mean, as you said, this is, yeah, we are exploring all opportunities. You know, I think, you know, we're hoping, as everyone else, that this crisis does pass sooner rather than later, and we're able to interact and meet and hopefully convene as a community at our convention in November. But we're taking the necessary steps to plan for different scenarios. So, you know, it's a long time away, and as we've seen, this particular crisis has been changing rapidly. So it's very hard to make any predictions now. But we are taking every step we can right now to really plan for the future and plan for different, you know, scenarios, as I said. So we'll be sure to let our members know and the greater community know as we move forward about what we're looking at, what we're observing, and what decisions we're making as we get closer to our convention date in November.
Yeah, and by the way, you're not alone out there, as you well know from all the organizations that you know and work with, et cetera. Okay,
right.
And let me just put it this way. There will be a way for everyone interested in gifted education to somehow get together. Okay, it may not be in person, but there's going to be a way. Can we say that? There's going to be a way.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's right. Yeah, one of the strengths I've always believed is that associations, organizations like NAGC, is we bring people together. And if we want to be able to do it in person, but we can also do it online, and we want to make sure that people find a way to connect with their peers, with their networks, and with others to support each
Absolutely.
Other through this time.
Absolutely. And what's going on? The school's closed, obviously, for the year there, right? Right there, right, Tracy? What's happening in the future in Western Kentucky? You have any idea yet?
Well, it's interesting. I was just talking with my director about that. We have offered summer programming for students for 38 years, and this will be the first time that we are going to transfer those to online camps. And
there
one of
go.
Our greatest challenges is that we still want to have that community that is so important. It's not just an academic camp. It's for the whole child. And so we are working, got a task force together recently, and we're going to figure out how to make this the very best experience we can for kids. So that's what we're working
on
right now.
That's super. And by the way, I don't know who the director is of the Center for Gifted Studies, but she must be incredibly brilliant, because you're incredibly brilliant and you're the associate director. So she must.
Well, you are very kind. Dr. Julia Roberts is my director, and you're right. She's an amazing
person. I remember her in Pretty Woman. She was excellent.
Oh, yes.
That's doing problem.
I can't tell you how many disappointed hotel clerks there are when we go to check in and they see that it's not the Julia Roberts they were expecting.
You know, I'll tell you the truth. I always kid around here because I do radio, so I always tell everybody I look just like Brad Pitt. Okay? And it's the same thing. I can't tell you how many disappointed people there are when they meet me. Okay? The number is infinite. Okay? So Julia must be incredible if you're the associate director. Yeah, that's all I can say about that. By the way, do you know my friends down at Berea College? They're Kentucky, too. Do you know them? Do you work with them at all?
I know the folks, yes. That's a terrific place, Berea. I love what they do.
Sweetheart of a college.
For people. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I work with a woman down there named Dreema Gentry. She's just wonderful. I don't know if you know her, but they do so much reaching out to kids. It's unbelievable, as I'm sure Western Kentucky does. Sounds like a great school. What's the name of the team? It's not the Colonels. What's the name of the team? The mascot.
We are Hilltoppers. We are
the Hilltoppers.
Yes.
My high
and
school.
And if you ever visit Western Kentucky,
yes.
Well, we are on a big hill, so
it's
aptly named. And our mascot is red. Yes.
Oh. All right. Very good. All right. Well, I want to thank you both, and I'm going to be in touch, and we're going to get another article in there. We work with the world-famous Dr. Plucker quite a bit, as you guys well know. All right. And
we're
going to be working with Dr. Inman. Okay. So be prepared to hear from me. Okay, Tracy? All right. Be my pleasure
thank
as well.
You so much,
John,
Larry.
Great show, my friend. You keep up the good work.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure as always.
It's always a pleasure. Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing to you and Tracy. It's a pleasure. We'll be in touch. Okay.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Larry.
Okay, and tell Julia Roberts she was great. She was great in every movie I've ever seen her in. That's a great name, man. That's incredible.
I
love
that.
Okay. We'll find out more about the Center for the Gifted Studies over at Western Kentucky as we go through this. This is great. Thank you both. Have a safe and good day today. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That's John Sagota from NAGC, NAGC.org. This is a hidden little part of education that is too often overlooked, gifted kids, and I've learned a lot about them over the years. They are our brightest. We have to work very closely to make sure they, and all kids, but that we don't have these kids move fall through the cracks, okay? And there's not enough gifted educators out there and enough people with the talent to find these kids. So please, let's make it happen. And Tracy Inman is down in Western Kentucky University. Dr. Inman is the Associate Director of the Center for Gifted Studies at Western Kentucky, home of the Hilltoppers. All right, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Please go over to ace-ed.org, see what we're doing. It's all about equity and access. We want your voice heard. And our magazine and our information over there is excellent at ace-ed.org. My name is Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening.